Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the Consumer Directed Home Care Webinar. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we'll conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. If you'd like to ask a chat question during the presentation, please use the chat feature located at the lower left corner of your screen. If you need to reach an operator at any time, please press star 0. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Tuesday, April 9th, 2013. I'd now like to turn the conference over to Sarah Serber. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Great. Thank you so much. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome. My name is Sarah Serber, and I am the Associate for Advocacy and Development at the National Consumer Voice for Quality Long-Term Care, called the Consumer Voice for short. For those of you who don't know us, we are a nonprofit national organization that advocates for people receiving care and services at home, in assisted living, or in a nursing home. The Consumer Voice is the leading national voice representing consumers in issues related to long-term care, helping to ensure that consumers are empowered to advocate for themselves. We are a primary source of information and tools for consumers, families, caregivers, advocates, and ombudsmen to help ensure quality care for the individual. I will be facilitating this afternoon's webinar on consumer-directed home care, along with my colleague, Aaliyah Murphy. I'd like to welcome you all today and thank you for taking the time out of your day to listen. I'd like to start today's webinar by giving you a brief overview of what you can expect to learn during the presentation. First, Peggy Powell, Director of Curriculum and Workforce Development at PHI, is going to provide us with a summary and overview of what consumer-directed care is. She will cover what, as I said, consumer direction is, what the different models of consumer direction are, and what does and also what it looks like in various states, what consumers say they need in self-direction, and lastly, where you can go to learn about consumer direction in your state. After Peggy's presentation, she will take questions from participants. After that, we'll hear from two consumers who direct their own care and services in their home. They will each share their experiences about how they started directing their own care, how they found their workers, how they pay for their workers, and also what they like and don't like about directing their own care in general. First, we'll hear from Julie Sanchez, a consumer who lives and directs her own care in New Mexico. And then we'll hear from Nellie Ferrante, an 85-year-old consumer who lives and directs her own care in Ohio. There will also be a question and answer portion for anyone who has questions for Julie or Nellie. Once we've heard from all of our speakers, I will conclude today's presentation with a little information about how you can get involved with the Consumer Voice. Now, let's start today by turning it over to Peggy. Peggy Powell is PHI's National Director of Curricular and Workforce Development. In that capacity, she leads PHI's work to strengthen the direct care workforce through developing innovative approaches to recruitment, training, and supporting frontline workers. She also works with PHI's policy team to advocate for effective public policies that support workforce development in long-term care. In addition, Peggy oversees development of all publicly disseminated curricula. Peggy has been a part of PHI since its founding and has worked with organizations of all sizes to help structure programs to meet immediate and long-term needs, including train-the-trainer programs, executive coaching, recruitment and retention strategies, and peer mentoring initiatives. She has also co-developed the curriculum, providing personal care services to elders and people with disabilities, a model curriculum for direct care workers, and also co-authored numerous other publications, including Successfully Employing Your Personal Assistants, a workshop series for people with disabilities designed to prepare people with disabilities to find and effectively supervise and support their own personal assistance staff. Peggy, thank you so much for joining us today. Please feel free to begin.
Thank you, and good afternoon to everyone that's on the call. And I appreciate the opportunity to share with you some of our resources and information that we've developed, much of which I will be sharing is part of our Successfully Employing Your Personal Assistants curriculum and workshop. The first thing is in terms of what is consumer direction or self-direction. Self-direction is basically when a consumer is responsible for and in charge of their own services and supports, as it states here on the fact sheet. This particular option gives the consumer the greatest amount of control and flexibility But it's also, as we like to stress when we are conducting the different workshops, we like to stress that along with these this control and flexibility comes a fair degree of significant degree of responsibilities and rights that you have as a consumer. We think it's really important that individuals and people see consumer direction as being able to make the most informed choice about whether, in fact, this option is the right option for them and or the family member that they support and represent. If you're a consumer with a disability and you receive government services, and you receive, if you receive a government aid to pay for your personal assistance services, primarily through Medicaid, there are three options for managing your consumer-directed services. The three primary options are what we've named the agency-directed option, the consumer-directed option, and a blended option. Under the agency-directed option, the agency itself does the hiring and the firing and the training and scheduling of your personal assistants. And they also manage all of the administrative tasks that go along with, if you think about this from any kind of an employer, what are the responsibilities an employer has? So there are tasks such as payroll and benefits and required insurance. The consumer-directed option, in that particular option, you manage some aspects of your services and supports, including the hiring and training and supervising and firing of your personal assistants. And you can also, depending on what particular program you're part of, you can also have the ability to handle some administrative tasks, such as approving your timesheets for payment and obtaining the personal assistance medical clearances. And in the blended option, it's basically a mix of the hiring and supervising of your PAs in a way that provides you with some of your services and supports directly, and then you might contract with an agency to provide some of the other services that you may need. What do these responsibilities look like within each of the various options? First of all, in recruiting and hiring your personal assistants, you see that the agency directed, under the agency option, the responsibility for advertising for PAs and covering those costs come under the agency. For you as the consumer, those costs would be borne and that process would be guided by yourself, the consumer. And if there's a blended option, you and a intermediary support organization or a consumer support organization, which could be a government group or an agency, would absorb those kinds of costs. It also includes the responsibilities for checking your personal assistance work and other relevant references, the direct hiring of the PAs, and ensuring that the paperwork for the personal assistance is in order to ensure that both ensuring that the paperwork is submitted and that it is approved. The second major area for the responsibilities of as an employer are in managing your assistance services. Under this general category, you have responsibilities and rights such as scheduling your personal assistants, reviewing and submitting their timesheets, setting up backup and emergency plans when your assistants are sick or on vacation or unable to come to work, and keeping accurate records and reporting any changes. Again, the distinctions between the agency model and the consumer-directed model are that when it's an agency, the agency is obviously the one that will manage these particular services. And when it's a consumer, it might be, it's yourself and could be a consumer support organization such as a Center for Independent Living or other organization that supports the consumer in obtaining these services. Under the other responsibility that the consumer would have is in the area of overseeing administrative matters. If you'll give me a moment, I want to just make sure that I'm probably for those of you who are following along with the slideshow here. Under the administrative matters that the employer deals with, there is also the responsibilities for calculating salaries and weekly pay and benefits, overseeing the taxes and benefits of the personal assistant, covering work-related accidents and injuries and following your state's workman's comp policies, and ensuring that the employee has an annual physical exam and TB test. Again, once again, with the agency model, the agency is the one that would manage these particular sets of responsibilities. Under the consumer-directed model, either the government agency that is supporting and funding the option or a community support organization such as a SIL, there might be a shared responsibility in terms of actually identifying and determining the salaries, as one example, and overseeing some of the taxes and benefit options. And or it might be a shared responsibility for ensuring that the physical examination and other necessary tests like TB tests happen. As you look at the category of supervising the your aide in terms of who are the rights and responsibilities for determining which duties PAs will or will not do, meeting with your assistant regularly to provide feedback and support, determining the training needs for your assistant and firing when necessary the individuals who aren't meeting your standards. This is an area that, again, is either controlled by the agency and or under consumer direction. It can be you and the PA directly. It is you and the PA directly. And meeting with the PAs regularly to provide your constructive feedback and determining the training needs and supporting them is under consumer direction, clearly falls under the responsibilities of the consumer themselves. When you use a blended option, what will occur there is that you and the agency or the consumer support agency or government group are the ones where you may share some of these responsibilities. As you can tell, and as you're hearing, listening to, or seeing these responsibilities and rights, there are advantages and disadvantages to each of the options. And we think this is an area where the consumer, before they select the consumer-directed option, wants to be very, very aware of. Let's look at the agency-directed model itself and the advantages and disadvantages to that. For the agency-directed model, the advantages that we see are usually that they have, sort of on-call almost immediately personal assistants who need work. They're looking for, assignments. They want to be able to work. So the advantage is that there's a pool of workers there that you can call upon through the agency. You can also switch agencies, and some agencies, although many of the agencies have similar rules, some agencies are, in fact, more attuned to what the model of consumer direction is and what the philosophy of consumer direction is. So if you were to work with an agency and identify an agency that you could, really understood the principles and philosophy of consumer direction, you could and might have a better relationship and partnership with that agency. the disadvantages, which we hear a lot of, and I'm sure those of you who are currently, you know, using the consumer-directed option, the disadvantages are that the initial screening of the personal assistant is based mostly on your medical and personal assistance needs rather than your preferences. The availability of an aide is what determines the assignment, rather than the matching of the aide with you as a person who has unique needs and preferences. And also, a PA, a personal assistant who works for an agency, hours are generally less flexible since the scheduling is often determined around the agency's policies rather than the consumer's needs specifically. If there are additional advantages and disadvantages for the agency-directed model, it's also in the area of training. Under advantages, yes, the agencies will train and have requirements for training the aide that would be assigned for you. The primary disadvantage, again, which we hear often, is that the training usually focuses on the clinical and personal care techniques for the consumers who are aging or ill rather than on people with disabilities. The other advantage and disadvantage is in actually meeting the personal assistance needs. The key disadvantages there are that the agency, the personal assistant will often follow, not often, is required to follow the agency's plan of care. And they may have limits on how much they can respond to the individual consumer's preferences. Agencies also have policies for services that the government covers, and they are the ones who create and change care plans based on policies, again, mostly instead of what the needs or preferences are for the individual consumer. Under the area of supervision and administration in the agency-directed model, the advantages are that the agency gets to do all the paperwork. They're the ones who are completing the care plans and the work agreements and the timesheets. They're the ones who, you know, have to deal with approving payrolls and ensuring the medical clearances and conducting background and reference checks. That is a huge amount of work for an individual employer or consumer to learn how to take on and to really manage those pieces of their responsibilities in that area. The key disadvantage is that the personal assistants see the agency as their employer and supervisor, and you as their quote-unquote patient or client or their case. So that was primarily in under that agency model. When you begin to look at the advantages and disadvantages of the consumer-directed model, this is often where the consumers are most attracted, the individual is most attracted to this option, is when you think about what is the key advantage of this option. And the key advantage is that you can choose your own personal assistant, your own employee, and you can design your own schedule for your personal assistant services. To do this, though, you may have the disadvantages. You may have limited knowledge and skills to be able to advertise and recruit for your personal assistant. And you may have difficulties finding a personal assistant that can meet your specific scheduling needs under the area of, you know, this is in terms of looking for and identifying and assigning a personal assistant. The training advantage is clearly that you can train the personal assistants to provide the services in the way that you want them and support in your own way, in the way your preferences, meet your own preferences. And the disadvantage to that is that the consumer, you may have some types of physical or intellectual or cognitive limitations that actually make training difficult for you to do and or even your family member to do. There's also at times a discomfort on the part of the individual consumer when they train their personal assistants. And in certain categories, they may want to have their personal assistant, they may have that person trained by someone else. There may be a preference on the part of the consumer to have someone else actually do the training. Under the responsibilities of kind of meeting what the personal assistant's needs are, again, the biggest advantage is that you can get the services and support in the way you want and need and in the ways that you prefer. You have more flexibility in managing the activities for daily limit, for daily living and changes in your routine. There's much more flexibility in the how that, and on a daily basis, on a routine basis, that you will have these services provided. Again, the disadvantages are for either the consumer or the family member that may be supporting the consumer is that there may be physical or, again, intellectual or developmental barriers to developing one's own schedule and ensuring that you can get the services in the way that you're asking for them. A huge problem, particularly when you have yourself and or family members trying to manage these services, is that there's oftentimes a sense of feeling overwhelmed when, you know, you've forgotten something or when changes occur. And the challenge is also in hiring personal assistants who are willing and able to be flexible. And at times what that can result in is no coverage when these challenges come up. And then there's always the challenge of having problems getting emergency or last-minute coverage. Under consumer direction, the advantages and the disadvantages in this area are the key advantages for supervision and administration is that you can develop a sense of confidence for managing your services effectively, and you can learn communication and people management skills that can help in all parts of life. The disadvantages and the underside of this responsibility is that, you know, many people, it's not just in consumer direction, but there's an inexperience in supervising, like any new supervisor, inexperience in supervising your PAs or any staff member. There's oftentimes maybe language and or other types of communication barriers to understanding the individuals that are working with you. So the blended option, when it's a possibility, certainly, you know, seems to be at first blush a win-win for all. You can get the best of the consumer and agency directed option. For example, one example we talk about is you can directly hire your PA to provide support in the ways you want, but you can also use a agency to provide these services to fill in scheduling gaps, such as in emergencies, on weekends, or during vacations. The other advantage is that you may be unable or unwilling to train a person you hire. So you can hire the person, provide the services based on skills and experience they already have, and perhaps use the agency to provide a personal assistant that's already retrained in your required areas. You may also have to find the right PA personal assistant quickly because that assistant is not another, your current one is not working out or has to leave without much notice. So an agency can certainly provide backup service until you can recruit and hire the right person. And I'm going to talk a little bit about hiring and what are some of the challenges and opportunities in terms of trying to hire the right assistant. The key disadvantage to the blended option that we've mentioned already is that now you have to manage two sets of expectations, two sets of relationships. The first relationship is with the personal assistant that you hire and supervise directly, and now the relationship with the personal assistant that the agency hires and supervises. There are different sets of expectations on the part of the agency, as we said, and the relationship you are able to have. You essentially have two people in your home who have two different sets of expectations and are essentially responding to, accountable to, two different supervisors. Secondly, you have to know and accept the responsibilities and limitations of receiving the services from an agency while you advise and direct the agency's personal assistant to meet your needs and preferences. And finally, you and the agency will have to work, will have different work policies that many times may end up conflicting with each other. So there is a challenge to having to manage those differences also with the agencies, in addition to needing to manage those kinds of differences on a routine basis with the personal assistants you hire when those issues come up. So I'm going to pause there just to see if there is anyone who would like to either comment or ask a more specific question based on this sort of overview.
Excellent. Peggy, thank you so much. Mark, we're now ready for question and answer. And Aaliyah, do we have any questions that have come over the chat?
Sure. One question is, when Peggy, you are talking about agencies, are you referring to social services? Could you maybe explain a little bit more by what you mean by agency?
Well, there are different agencies that provide personal assistance services within a given community. Some of them might be home health agencies. Some of them might be agencies that provide only personal assistance services. Within home health agencies, as an example, you may have a home health aide who clearly has been trained to provide both personal assistance as well as the sort of medical and clinical services, or you may have an agency, let's say that's a social service agency, a community-based agency, that may provide only personal care, you know, a personal assistant at that level of care. So what's important is that those agencies are largely private, non-profit, could be for-profit, but they're, you know, individually owned, and they usually contract with government agencies to provide the different services. They could also be a private agency. But those are when we're talking about agencies about that you could hire from, it would be those type of agencies. You know, there's also obviously the consumer support organization like a Center for Independent Living in the community that is structured and organized primarily to provide supports for, you know, individuals with, you know, consumers with disabilities. Typically, those agencies are much more responsive to and centered, much more centered around the consumer's needs than you would find with an agency that's primarily looking at providing the sort of medical and clinical services in a non-waiver program like the Medicaid waiver program for consumers, consumer direction.
Ladies and gentlemen, great. If you'd like to register a phone question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You'll hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question's been answered and you'd like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. Our first phone question comes from the line of Phil Bennett. Please proceed with your question.
Hello. Hello, everybody. I was hoping to ask the question later after everybody else had spoken. Is that all right?
Yeah, that's no problem. Just dial back in after once we open up the second question and answer portion.
Okay. It just seems premature to ask now.
Okay, not a problem. Thank you.
And thank you.
Our next phone question comes from the line of Barbara Stuck. Please proceed with your question.
Yes. My father is on a consumer-directed home care program, and I manage it for him. He is 96, and it's done through Medicaid. I think consumer-directed is a wonderful option for people because it makes you feel like you're a little more in control. I agree that one of the drawbacks is that when an aide isn't going to show or something happens, you're in a quandary about what to do about coverage. My question is, Medicaid has often told me that if I'm doing consumer-directed and then have something come up where I don't have anybody that I can use and I would like the agency to supply somebody, that they can't switch back and forth. Is that true? My agency that I work with has been very good, and they've helped me get the aids that I use on a regular basis. But in an emergency, it seems like lots of times I end up just having to pay people instead myself. Do you know anything about that?
Mm-hmm. What I do know is, to the degree to which I know, is that each state has its, what makes this challenging to give any one answer is that each state has its own, you know, regulations and policies regarding who can provide services, you know, under that consumer-directed waiver option. So I would not be able to respond directly to say, oh, well, you know, it seems like, you know, you could certainly reach out to your you know, the Medicaid agency that provided the service and say, well, I'd really like to have backup services for my father, and would like to work with an agency. What I understand from the work that, you know, I have been engaged in is that, in fact, I was once told that I should sort of, like, kind of stay away from the blended option because it is so limited in the way, you know, there are certain states that will allow for it, but there are others, most will not, and that's what it sounds like.
Okay. Well, I think the Consumer Directed Program is wonderful, and I'm fortunate that my agency will, they've gotten me the aids that I use through Consumer Directed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think it's a good program, so thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Mark, I think we have time for about one more question.
Okay. Our next question comes from the line of Wendy Spriggle. Please proceed with your question.
Yes, I just wanted a little more clarification on what individuals with disabilities might be eligible for consumer-directed home care. I am clear from Ms. Powell's earlier comments that the individual must have a disability and receive services via Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
And consumer direction, then, is a Medicaid waiver. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Okay. And so I guess I wanted if you could share any other eligibility requirements. I mean, I understand from the Uniform Assessment Instrument there are various levels of assistance that an individual with a disability may require, anywhere from supervision to maximum assistance. And I also wanted to know if they have to own a home, rent a home, could they live with someone else, could they be homeless?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
I just, those are the other eligibility
questions. The question that you're asking really has to do, obviously, with the Medicaid eligibility, you know, sort of stipulations within your, you know, your state. I think my guess would be that the best place, if you haven't already approached a Center for Independent Living, that serves as a real resource for this type of information, and might be able to give you some additional advice. Certainly, they can give you some answers to the questions about Medicaid eligibility. You might also check out your State Office on Aging that, you know, manages the different Medicaid waiver programs, to see what, you know, what are the boundaries in the sense of the stipulations around eligibility for the services. Sometimes, and this is at a very personal level, I'm in New York, and I just learned, as one example, that there's a option program under the city's Department of Aging that provides the services for, that provides resource information and also some funding for people with disabilities who are seeking services, just services in general, that are not Medicaid eligible. It might be that there are some options. What happens in that option is that the consumer ends up paying a small amount, like kind of based on sliding scale, for some personal assistance services that they wouldn't be able to pay for at all. They'd have to pay it whatever the going rate is for an agency. If they're eligible under this option, they end up paying a small portion of what the service would normally cost in terms of private contracting. But I think that the best place to go would be to, for those kinds of questions, is really to consult with the, any kind of social service organization that is involved with doing Medicaid eligibility assessments and, at least answering the questions from that place, to see if there is some Medicaid option that would allow you to receive the services, the consumer-directed services.
Yes, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Could I make one more comment, Sarah, that I wanted to speak with that didn't get here in terms of the slide, and that I think it goes back to I think it was Wendy who mentioned this, about ways to find assistance and candidates in your community. There are two handouts that are up on the website, and I return your attention to the first one is a very short description about how you can make notes in advance of interviewing for yourself, what kinds of expectations you would have for the personal assistant you hire, be able to, be prepared to speak about your preferences and very specifically about the kinds of job responsibilities that you expect of this person during the interview process, because this is really the place to start that conversation. Complete that in a way that this essentially becomes the job description and that you start out with and that you revisit with your personal assistant. The other handout gives you some additional ideas about how you might independently look for, candidates for personal assistance in terms of a direct hire, community hire. Much of the personal assistance is provided by close friends and or family members, depending on what's allowable for each state. And you also want to be able to go beyond, ideally to be able to go beyond the individuals who are your family members and your friends, to perhaps have particularly for backup services and just being able to offer some paid services too, if that works in terms of what the needs are.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Well, of course, Peggy, thank you so much for presenting today. I'm sure I'm speaking for everyone when I say that it was so valuable, everything that you presented on, and I really thank you for all of the information. And I also want to let that all of the participants today, I want to let you know that the two handouts that Peggy just referenced were included in the call materials for today's webinar, so you should have access to them. Now I would like to introduce Julie Sanchez. Julie directs her own home care in the state of New Mexico, and Julie currently serves on the Advisory Council of the Consumer Voices New Mexico Consumers for Quality Care No Matter Where. Julie is a fierce advocate and is always happy to help lend a voice for long-term care consumers in any way that she can. Julie, thank you so much for joining us today. Please share with us your experiences with Consumer Direction.
Certainly, you are quite welcome. Buenas tardes, mis amigos. Okay, a little background. I'm a 59-year-old woman who has MS, and I'm wheelchair-bound. I spent 3.5 years in the nursing home, which was not a very nice time for me. But with the help of the ombudsman program, I was able to transition into a really, really nice apartment. So when I got out of the nursing home, I need to have personal care. I was kind of told about self-directed, but I really didn't know much about it, so I stayed with an agency. It took two agencies that were not too good. I didn't have good experiences with them. So I found the third agency that I'd been with for a couple of years. I decided to go to self-directed in November of just last year, so I'm a real newbie with that. I wasn't real happy with the agency. I wasn't happy with the people that they were sending to me. There just wasn't a great deal of confidence in them. I did find these two women that are with me now, my workers. They had been working with me from the agency, and they turned out to be wonderful. We just clicked. They were just super. And so when I decided to go to self-directed, I asked these two women if they would quit the agency, which they had to do, and work with me. I would be the employer. And they were very happy to do that. And I'm happy that it worked out because it's been very, very super. I recently thought that one of my workers was not going to be able to stay with me. And so I thought, well, I'm going to have to replace her. I didn't know how I was going to go about doing that. So I put an ad on Craigslist to find a worker. And, boy, let me tell you, that was quite a surprise. I kid you not. I put my ad in one afternoon at about 2 o'clock, and I got my first response at 2:10. So I know people are looking for jobs, but I didn't know it was going to be that quick. I had no experience of that. Now, I had maybe, I would say, 50 to 60 responses to my ad. I was pretty, what's the word I want? I can't think. I was pretty clear about what I wanted. I made things clear in the ad, what I was looking for in a worker. The things that they were going to have to do and that kind of thing. When I talked to them on the phone, I did, of course, first phone interview with them. I asked what their experience was. I asked them to tell me something about themselves. I asked them what their work experience was and listened to what they had to say. Then I asked for references, work references, personal references, that kind of thing, because I wanted to know, their experience and, for references so that I could call them, the references to get some feedback on these people. I got some people that emailed their resumes to me online, and like I said, it was very, very impressive, some of these people. But as it turned out, my caregiver wasn't going to leave after all, so I called all these people back and to tell them thank you for their interest. But, it was very surprising to me. I did not know how it was going to work out. So doing a Craigslist thing was interesting. People were cautioning me, mother and friends and stuff like that, to be very careful, which I could understand because people, not want jobs or whatever and things. So I thought I was being very careful about that. But I have to tell you, I was fairly impressed by the number of responses I got, and also very impressed by the caliber of some of the people. Now, if it had gone further than the phone interview, I was going to ask them to do a face-to-face meeting to see if we clicked to, just that kind of feeling. So anyway, but I didn't have to get to that point, thank God. Now, my interview questions had to do with, like I said, work experience references. They would do errands for me, so I needed to know if they had a valid driver's license and insurance. I needed to know where they lived because in case of an emergency, would I be, I wanted to call them. I needed to know if they would be able to help me in case of an emergency. I asked them if I'm wheelchair bound, but I have an electric wheelchair. When the weather gets nice out here in New Mexico, the weather is beautiful. So I love to go out for walks. I live close to a park, and I have a dog, so we like to walk the dog. Oh, that's the other thing. The dog was part of the ad, the interview question. Could they walk the dog? Did they have a problem picking up after the dog? Those kinds of things. I needed to know that also. But the walking was important. They needed to do some walking because I love to go in the summertime and stuff. So that was part of the interview question. Now, I have two different workers right now. This was set up when it was with the agency. The state only gave me 37 hours a week for the people. So it was split up to someone come in the morning because they had to get me up out of bed and clean me up and those kinds of things, groom me, bathe me sometimes, do a bed bath, that kind of thing. So they would have to do cleaning, cooking for me, sweeping and mopping, you know, cleaning the house, that kind of thing. So those were part of the duties that they had to have. In the evening time, okay, they would leave. I'm sorry, I'm backing. I'm getting confused here. It was scheduled for 3 hours in the morning and then 2 in the evening because I wore a brace. So someone has to come in the evening to take off my brace and get me ready for bed, that kind of thing. But during the day, I would be by myself. I would be kind of independent. I could be by myself in the wheelchair. I could get myself into bed and out of bed transfer. I was taught how to do that in the nursing home. They would leave food out for me that they had cooked previously. They would leave food out for me so that I could warm up in the microwave and eat on my own. So I was able to do that. But I said, like I said, I had to have a worker in the evening to come and take off my brace. So those 5 hours, or maybe even, sorry, I'm getting confused. Someone in the morning and someone in the evening is how it worked out when I was at the agency, and that seemed to work out well enough for me, so I kept that schedule. Now that I'm on self-directed, it's much better because I had a finite number of hours when I was with the agency, and so we couldn't go over those hours, and that made it difficult. Self-directed is much better because now I have more hours. They can work with me. We can go out and do things. I'm in a little box when I was with the agency with a certain number of hours. Now I'm not in that box anymore. I can take more hours to do my shopping or going out and doing more things to be back in the community. Now, let's see. When it's worked out so far with these two women that if someone can't show up, the other can pick up for them. I may not get the number of hours in a day that I need, but I do have somebody every day to come, and that seems to work out well enough. We can work around that very well. Let's see. What I like about self-direction is the fact that I can keep my people that I like, these two women whom I absolutely love, and pay them what they're worth. So with the agency, they only paid them just about minimum wage. They were getting $8 an hour, and they were not getting paid for mileage, which is something part of their duty was to run errands for me. And they were willing to do that, and bless their hearts, but it made me feel really bad that I couldn't pay them for mileage, and so I didn't want to send them all over town just to find something for me. I kept in this area, you know, to send them to do things. But they were willing to do it, bless their hearts. So now I can pay them mileage, and I feel that makes me happy. I feel that I can pay them what they are worth, because getting minimum wage for what they were doing was just not good enough. So I was able to pay them more with the money that was budgeted. Okay. Talking about budgeting, I probably skipped over that, but maybe you can ask that later if you have a question about it. But what I like about consumer direction is being the boss and being able to help to choose the people that I want to work for me and being able to pay them what they're worth. And that's the great thing I like about consumer direction. What I don't like about consumer direction is the money for my care comes from the state, okay, but I can't get my hands on the money directly. It was sent to an agency, to an entity called Xerox, not the copier people, but that's the name of the agency. They've got the money, okay, it was budgeted for me from my consumer-directed or my self-directed agency. They made the budget for me, and they've sent this budget off to Xerox for whatever I need, okay. In order to get my hands on the money or for my workers to get paid, they have to fill out a timesheet, okay? Then we have to fax it into Xerox. Xerox cuts a check and then gives it to my workers. They also, one of the good things about Xerox is that they take care of doing the W-2 doing all the taxes and things like that for my workers, so I think that that's good. But in order for me to get my hands on money for me to pay my bills, which is budgeted, I have to fill out a form. It's got a code. I have to fax that to Xerox. Xerox looks at it. Then maybe if I put the code in correctly or something, they don't tell me about this. They send me something maybe 2 weeks later saying that the code was incorrect. I don't get the money. If I do the code correctly and have sent it into Xerox, then it's still another 2 weeks before I get the money. Oh, it's been a real pain to get my money from the Xerox organization, even though the money is budgeted. That's the one big thing I don't like about the Xerox thing, about the money, because the money's there for me, but I can't get my hands on it very easily. It's very, very annoying. Let's see. I think that's all I have to say right now, and thank you for listening to me.
Julie, that sounds great. Thank you so very much for sharing your experiences with us. We really, truly appreciate it. I would now like to turn the presentation over to Nellie Ferrante. Nellie is 85 years old and directs her own home care and services in the state of Ohio. Nellie is an artist in her spare time, and she also likes to keep busy and keep her mind occupied. Nellie, thank you for being here today. Please share with us your experiences about directing your own care.
All right. Actually, mine is a little different than hers. I'm on Social Security, and I started with an agency, and from there, I got into Passport, which is directed by Area Agency 7, and it's an organization that helps seniors. And then I got a letter from an organization called Choices, and they stated that I was eligible to take care of my own worker. And I read all the information they sent me, and they said the beginning salary was $750, I believe, and didn't have any benefits. And I said, this is not good for my worker, and I'm not interested, and I tossed it. Then a couple months later, the worker that had been taking care of me had another client, and her daughter was taking care of her paperwork, and she wanted her to join the Choices. And I told them my views on it, that there was no recruiting value there, that if we needed to recruit somebody, there was nothing there that I could offer somebody. So she kept begging until I set up an interview with the Choices person, and she came out and said, well, we could offer more starting money than that, and explained it better than the letter did, and I said, all right, I'll try it. And since they were just getting started with that program here in Ohio, it took a little longer than I'd like to get it set up, but we finally got it set up, and this one girl that had been working for me, her father was terminally ill, and she told me that she couldn't go over to Choices. First of all, she'd been working for me through the agency, and it wasn't apropos to go from one to the other. And but she recommended another girl who was going to college to get her nurse's degree, and she signed up. So that was my first girl. And then when she was ready to go back to college, the girl that had been working for me was available, and she started working for me, and she stayed with me about 4 years, and I've been on this particular program about 6-7 years. And she left in 2009, I believe, and my current girl had been working as an alternate when she couldn't be there or wanted time off. My current lady started on as an alternate. And then when Teresa left, Melissa came on permanent. And then the way I got her was through Choices program. I called the case manager and asked her if she had anyone available. She sent me a list of four people that was looking for a job, and I chose Melissa. And then after we had been working a while, they informed me that we had to have an alternate. And again, I called the agency, and they gave me some names, and I selected one from the list. But there's some really good information in the book that they sent me. They provided me with a great deal of help and educational material. And the book they gave me to begin with has all the interview questions that you can ask. But since my last 26 years of working, I was an employer interviewer, and I interviewed and hired their people. I can tell you that the easiest way is just to welcome them into your home and talk to them as you would a friend and find out what they like to do best, what they like best about their last job, what they didn't like, and how they felt about going into somebody else's home. And for me, it was really important to that they have a car, because I am now on dialysis and I have to go 3 days a week for treatment, and they have to take me. So a car is important, and I, of course, I checked to see if they had small children, and if they did, who would care for them, so because that is a problem of somebody attending. I have two workers, the main worker, Melissa, and the alternate, Carrie, and they're very compatible, and we have a question of attendance or can't go or anything, they're very good to cooperate with me and coordinate time off and that sort of thing. So there's no problem there. If a situation should arise and I don't have the time to work with it, my daughter, who has a back problem, will still come over, and she does the time if they can't be here. As far as them getting paid, it's through the state. And let me tell you, this has been a surprising revelation to me, because I didn't think they had any benefits and the workers wouldn't be interested. But to my surprise, the thing that they liked about the whole thing was that Choices had a paycheck, a company that wrote the checks and deducted the taxes and stuff. They did this for the workers, and oddly enough, the workers thought that was the best benefit they ever had. And so that was an experience for me. I thought I was too old for that, but it worked out. And that is a good selling point. But as far as interviewing and questions, like Peggy said, there's things you can go to on the computer, but if you don't have a computer and you haven't had experience, it's just as easy as welcoming a new neighbor in and getting acquainted if you take her viewpoint. Now, as I said before, they had an agency that did the payroll. Well, last year, they changed the payroll thing, and Ohio needs jobs, and they sent, somebody in government sent the payroll work from Ohio to somebody in Arizona, and we have had nothing but trouble from them. Every month there is a problem getting the girls paid. They find some excuse to not pay them, and right now one of my workers, they didn't pay her the full amount, and it's still in a mix-up. So we had a government, a governor, that his spoken thing was that he cared for the low-paid workers, and he was trying to better that area. And then this new governor has seemingly tried to undo everything he did, and the girls haven't had an increase since. And they would like to be considered at least enough to get a cost of living. And I have to agree with them. They work hard. They're not just a babysitter. They have to learn enough about the consumer to be able to go get the groceries. And in my case, I have so many food allergies, they have to read all the ingredients and make wise decisions. They can't just go in the store and pick up something. The same way with things for the house and other things that I need. They have to use a good judgment, and they do this. They do my shopping while I'm in dialysis, which is 3 hours, three times a day, as I said. And I would just like to see them given more respect as far as money is concerned. And I thank you for listening to me. I hope it helps. That's it. Sarah.
Great, Nellie. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing your perspective and your experiences about directing your own care with us. I just can't tell you how much we really appreciate it. So we would now like to open it up and see if anyone has any questions for Julie or Nellie. Mark, we are ready for the Q&A.
Thank you. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to register for a phone question, press the 1 followed by the 4 on your phone. If your question has been answered and you'd like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. One moment, please, for our first question. Our first question comes from the line of Lauren Freeman. Please proceed with your question.
Yes, this is Lauren Freeman in the state of Washington, and I had a question for Ms. Sanchez. I posted it on the chat list as well. Ms. Sanchez, you seem to indicate that your hours increased when you shifted from an agency approach to care to self-directed care. Is that actually the case? And if so, how did that happen, do you think?
Well, when I was with the agency, the state, I should say, when I first got out of the nursing home, gave me a certain number of hours, finite number of hours that I had to work around, okay? When I switched to self-directed, there was the money, but I could choose the hours. Is that making sense?
So it was the same amount of money, but you were able to manage that in a different way.
That is correct.
And you... And you were able to supplement that with other funds?
No, it was the funds that were the state had given me.
Okay, well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Our next question comes in line of Nathan Luce. Please proceed with your question. Mr. Luce, your line is open. Please proceed with your question.
Sorry about that, guys. I had the mute on there, so it would be loud. I was listening to Julie there on her experience with the starting up or with the account and how the money had to go through another agency to implement the money. And so I was wondering if I'm from Washington State as well, and I was just curious if whether or not they had ever spoke about a consumer having an account designated for their personal care. The reason why I say that is because I've used Social Security's PASS program, Plan for Achieving Self-Support, when I was going through college, and that program, that was one of the ways they like to budget their money, you know, because they give you a certain amount based on your plan for achieving self-support. So you just say there's $400 a month. If you save it up each month, then by the eighth month, you'll have enough to buy whatever you needed to continue on. You know, so it's really putting everything into my hands and giving me that ability and flexibility. And so, and when the other person was saying, so anyway, I was just wondering if there was ever any talk about having an account to be able to handle your own affairs. Because it seems that I would just love nothing more than to be I self-directed my care for 21 years since I broke my neck when I was 18. But consumer-directed care, it's like cash and counseling, money follows the person. And I think that's a great, great way because to restrict ourselves, well, you can see how much we are restricted just based on the ability, based on the statement of knowing that you can receive more out of your care by budgeting it yourself versus an agency. I would never use an agency. It just wouldn't be possible and then my other question is if anybody can answer this question. So one was about the account, if that could be opened up or if that would have helped you out or anything. And then the other question is how do we hold people accountable for you know, like confidentiality? It's a big issue. Referral registries and whatnot, they'll sit there and bounce back and forth stuff about people. And when you want to keep your life private, because you know, it's a real hard thing to do, especially when you work in the community and your communities are small. So just those are some issues I think that are questions that I have that I, you know, I'm not sure if we can answer them all right now or whatnot, but if anybody knows of how do you keep your personal assistant accountable if there is a lot of talking going on. Because, you know, everybody knows when you're getting care done, when you listen to your personal assistant talk and they talk about other people they don't care for, they start mentioning their name and where they lived and how much they made, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, I just would like to know what people think about that area of having a personal assistant. You know, I own my own home and Habitat for Humanity built it for me and whatnot. And so there's just a lot of stuff about owning a home that you don't even want to have to tell everybody about and have everybody talk to you about it. And so anyway, I'm done with my questions.
Great. Thank you so much. Julie, do you have any response?
Well, I'm not quite sure what the question was. I'm sorry. I didn't quite know how to answer that. So, what is it that you really wanted to know?
Can you hear me still?
I can hear you. I'm fine.
Oh, okay, cool. It was more the account because I think you said that you guys use your company Xerox.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I was wondering, that seems to take away from the budget maybe a little bit, or it ties your hands And I don't believe in having our hands tied when we live in our homes. See, I'm a quadriplegic, and, you know, I'm tied up enough. So
I understand.
Yeah, so I'm just wondering, like, if you had an account set up in your name for care, you know, like Social Security would allow a person to do that in the vocational system. They would allow you to set up a bank account for the purpose of your vocational plan, and it's written out. Well, you have a, you know, so if you have a need or a designated amount of hours, which I do too, I get 393 hours, should be 420, but
wow.
In a month. But how you can use those hours versus, I mean, having to go through an agency would be, it seems to me, like Xerox, that handles your funds, or protective payee, whatever you want to call them. It sounds like that would be difficult in trying to make sure you keep, you know, making sure you get the money to fund whatever it is that, are you able to use your extra funding for other medical, like durable medical needs or
yes.
Anything? Yeah.
Yes, that is part of it, yeah. If my Medicaid thing, not to self-directed, doesn't pay for it, then self-directed will pay for that equipment if I need it. So my understanding is there is no problem getting that kind of durable medical equipment if I need that. That doesn't seem to be a problem at all.
Do you find yourself relying on Xerox to make that happen? You get the funding?
Well, I haven't. See, I'm so new to self-directed. I haven't gone through that situation in this time. But I have been told by my consultant that if I needed that would not be a problem to get. I could probably get it through my Medicaid or get it through them. But I was told if Medicaid didn't pay for what I needed, then self-directed would pay for it. So it doesn't seem like that would be a problem at all.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Great, thank you. Mark, could we grab the next question?
Yes, our next question comes to the line of Philip Bennett. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, everybody. I am a personal assistant. I've worked as a consumer-directed and an agency PA for over 36 years. First, about Xerox, Julie. This seems to be the trend that a lot, particularly in New York, we in consumer-directed, the consumers are now being required to sign in with a middle agency. And that seems to be the trend across the country. It's kind of a way of kind of urging folks to get more into nursing homes. And I think it's up to us who want to be independent to push back. Now, speaking of which, I have worked as over 36 years, and I may be forced to quit as a personal assistant and find a profitable line of work because of something called the companion exemption being eliminated from the Fair Labor Standards Act. Now, I know you're not lawyers, but the problem is that the Fair Labor Standards Act requires that if you work over 40 hours a week, that you must be paid time and a half. The problem is the agencies don't have the money. The government has Medicare and Medicaid capped, so they're not going to spend the extra money. And that means, according to the rules, I won't be able to work. And that means I won't be able to make a very profitable living as a personal assistant. And that's going to affect all of you because it means it will reduce the pool of workers available. And, I mean, they're probably going to earn more money working a lemonade stand if they are limited to just 40 hours a week. And aren't you kind of worried about this, that it's going to reduce the pool and that you might be forced into nursing homes? That's my question. Anyone can answer.
But this is Nellie. Let me say a few words about that. We here in Ohio, the people that I've talked to that uses this, they are concerned about the same issue. But they have the feeling that they're trying to eliminate these organizations like AAA 7 and Choices and force us back to an agency, and that is the biggest drawback in going from agency to consumer-directed, because they could send anybody out to you, whether they're trained or not. And
yes,
consumer-directed, you have your own person that you've picked. But that's not going to be available if they keep making it so unpalatable that they just get out of the area, you know, of paying. I'm finished.
Thank you, Nellie. Peggy, I was wondering if you also wanted to respond to this question, because I know that PHI has also been working really hard on this issue as well.
Hi, thanks, Sarah. We have certainly, PHI has in, obviously been supportive of the Fair Labor Standards, the companionship exemption. Looking at it from the jobs portion in terms of strengthening the direct care worker's job, and I heard the gentleman on the phone say that this is something that would really impact for him what is the quality of a personal assistance job he's had for many years. And we are aware, obviously, that within the particular environment that we are in, cost cutting and essentially budget cuts and so on, that the concern on the part of the consumers is exactly what's been expressed, that if there is not adequate resources in the implementation, assuming that the implementation will go forward for this companionship exemption, that it can in fact certainly threaten what is the ability to recruit workers, sufficient number of workers. What I would say is that, we operate from a place of wanting to ensure, as we do through many of our policy platforms, that there is sufficient resources to be able to, cover the kinds of additional costs. And this is also related in terms of sort of ensuring that there's sufficient training on the parts of individuals who are providing these sets of services. My response would be that I am certainly, and we are certainly aware of the concerns that have been expressed by consumers, and are hoping to work in, work collaboratively with groups to be able to ensure that the services can be provided in a way that suit the needs both of the workers as well as the consumers in this environment.
I have to disagree. PHI has been working harder to force more people with disabilities into nursing homes than into
mm-hmm.
keep them in their own homes.
Yes.
I've spoken at length with David Ward about this
mm-hmm.
and many other people with PHI, and you have all lobbied hard to totally eliminate the companion exemption, claiming mm-hmm. that you're helping us workers when you're actually ruining our lives.
Mm-hmm. I hear your perspective, and I can appreciate from where you are that and where you stand that is your perspective.
And you're blind. You are blind. When have you ever wiped another adult person's butt? What do you know about the work we do? What do you know about the work we do that you pretend to care?
Well, it isn't just the health worker that is being held down under 40 hours. That larger corporations have started doing this and have been for quite a few years. If they don't work a worker over 40 hours, they're not required to give them benefits.
Ma'am?
And this has been going on for
ma'am?
Years.
Home
yes.
care workers, I only earn $10 and 30 cents an hour. If my hours are limited, at least if I'm making more money per hour, I can survive. Under $10.30 an hour for 40 hours a week, I'm not going to survive.
Well, that is you and your budget. I'm just telling you what has been going on.
That is the average home care worker.
I have no control over it. I'm retired.
I know. I'm just saying that, well, as a voter, as a active person, you do have a little bit of control.
Well, Phil, this is Sarah. I just want to say thank you for your comments. We appreciate them. And, Mark, could we move on to the next Q&A?
Yes. Our next question comes in line of Althea McLucky. Please proceed with your question.
Yes, hello. This is Althea, and I'm not sure you all want me to go here because it's another comment about the companion exemption regulation, and perhaps enough time has been taken on this call about that. But I do just want to say that both as the parent of someone who receives services, as someone who receives services myself, and someone who has provided direct care in the past, as well as someone who has worked with other direct care staff currently, we are all in favor of overtime protections as well as minimum wage protections because we feel it supports the growth and of a workforce that it incentivizes people to go into the workforce, contrary to what the other gentleman was just speaking about. And we feel that because there are not enough direct care attendants at this point in time, we need to encourage others to go into the field. So I just would like the listeners on the call to recognize that there are many opinions on this issue. And maybe we need a call specifically about that. Thank you.
Althea, thank you so much for those comments. We appreciate it. And now I am just going to give some closing remarks and wrap up the webinar for today. I just want to thank everyone who submitted either a question over the phone or over chat. And again, if we didn't get a chance to answer your questions over the chat, we will be saving them, and we will try to get back to you. Also, I want to just give a very special thank you to Peggy, Julie, and Nellie for sharing with us their knowledge and their experiences regarding consumer-directed home care today. Obviously, this presentation couldn't have happened without the three of them, and I just want to thank the three of you so much for your time and your expertise. Before we leave for the afternoon, I just wanted to briefly tell you about a few opportunities for you all to connect with the Consumer Voice. As some of you may know, we recently formed a home care consumer focus group. It's really important to us at the Consumer Voice that we hear what consumers of long-term care are experiencing at the ground level and what they think. Individuals who receive long-term services and support in their home are really in the perfect position to share with us what they are experiencing. In turn, their opinions and feedbacks will help us present the consumer perspective to policymakers, help us think through what our positions should be on policy matters, and also determine what policy changes are needed to make care and services better. To accomplish that, we formed a focus group of home care consumers. Now, the next call for focus group will take place this summer. So if any of you on this call today are a consumer who receives long-term services and supports in your home and would like to be a part of this group, or if you know of a consumer who may be interested, please feel free to email me at scirba@theconsumervoice.org, or please call me at 202-332-2275, extension 221, and I'd be happy to place you on our email list. And also there is our direct phone line, and there is our general email address. So if you get in touch either of those ways, I'll be happy to put you in contact with our focus group. And then lastly, in addition to the focus group, we would like to invite those of you with email to join our Consumer Voice Action Network. The Action Network is a way to get information and keep up to date about the latest long-term care news and national and state policy developments, and also get opportunities for you to take action. To join the Action Network, it's very easy. All you have to do is go to our website, which is on the screen, www.theconsumervoice.org. If you just scroll down to the bottom of the main screen, click on the green box on the left-hand side of the page, which says Sign Up for Consumer Voice Action Network. Once you click on that green box, it will take you to the page where you can fill out your information and sign up. It's not only easy, it's also it's not only easy to sign up, it's also easy to take action. So we really hope that all of you take advantage of that opportunity. So in closing, I just want to thank you all again today for taking your time to view our presentation. And I just want to let you know that our next national webinar will take place this summer, so please stay tuned. And please don't forget about the Home Care Consumer Focus Group and the Action Network. So this will conclude our call. Thank you all again so much for your time. Goodbye, and have a great day.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our webinar. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your line.
Thank you.